Translation in purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O Siddha Goswami, you are a learned and pure devotee of the Lord, because the personality of Godhead is your chief object of service. Therefore, please describe to us the pastimes of the Lord, which are above all material conception, for we are anxious to receive such messages. Purport. The speaker on the transcendental activities of the Lord should have only one object of worship and service, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the audience for such topics should be anxious to hear about him. When such a combination is possible, namely a qualified speaker and a qualified audience, it is then and there very much congenial to continue discourses on the transcendence. Professional speakers and a materially absorbed audience cannot derive real benefit from such discourses. Professional speakers make a show of Bhagavat Saptaha for the sake of family maintenance, and the materially disposed audience hears such discourses of Bhagavat Saptaha for some material benefit, namely religiosity, wealth, gratification of the senses, or liberation. Such Bhagavatam discourses are not purified from the contamination of the material qualities, but the discourses between the saints of Naimisharanya and Sri Sutta Goswami are on the transcendental level. There is no motive for material gain in such discourses. In such discourses, unlimited transcendental pleasure is relished, both by the audience and by the speaker, and therefore they can continue the topics for many thousands of years. Now, Bhagavat Saptahas are held for 7 days only, and after finishing the show, both the audience and the speaker become engaged in material activities as usual. They can do so because the speaker is not Bhagavat Pradhan, and the audience is not Shushu Sadhan, as explained above. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitanyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeyaham Shri Guru Shri Yutha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Stam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanditamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpati Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Dade Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpata Rupyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vedadhar Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama Rama Rama, Hare Hare Namo Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prishthaya, Bhutare Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamini Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatadine. So I pray for all your blessings so that I can help facilitate an understanding of this verse and of Shivaratri. And I hope in this way to be able to serve you all. So I'll just go to the first translation one more time. The translation is, Sutta Goswami, you are a learned and pure devotee of the Lord, because the personality of Godhead is your chief object of worship, of service. Therefore, please describe to us the pastimes of the Lord, which are above all material conception, for we are anxious to receive such messages. And this is from the first canto of the Bhagavatam, 18th chapter, verse 15. So just to give some context, this verse is spoken just after Sutta Goswami has been chosen to speak to the sages of Naimisharanya. The sages had blessed him, and they expressed their pleasure at him speaking about the activities of Lord Krishna. They were perceiving the results of hearing these transcendental activities, and in the preceding two verses, the great value of devotee association and hearing about the Lord have been highlighted. From the first translation itself, we can infer that by having the Lord as the main focus of our service, we can become pure and learned, even if we're lacking in other qualifications. It's also explained that Krishna's pastimes are divine and above all mundane conception. In the previous verse's purport, it says that since the Lord is transcendent, his pastimes and qualities are also. As such, the reciter and audience are never satisfied. They're never satiated, sorry. In that way, they're never satisfied. But the qualification of Bhagavat Pradhan, which means having the Lord as one's main object, and Shushrusatam, being receptive, is given here in the first few sentences of the purport. It says, the speaker on the transcendental activities of the Lord should have only one object of worship and service, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the speaker for such topics should be anxious to hear about him. Srila Prabhupada says, when that combination is present, it's very much congenial, these are his words, to continue the discourse on transcendence. This means that the Bhagavatam would naturally be discussed regularly, as the Bhagavatam itself recommends, rather than just a seven-day reading. Nashta prayeshu padreshu nityam bhagavata sevya. So the translation to that verse is that by regular attendance in classes on the Bhagavatam and by rendering service to the pure devotee, all that's troublesome to the heart is almost destroyed, completely destroyed, and loving service to the Supreme Lord, who's praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So this is the recommendation given in the Bhagavatam itself of how it should be read, and the fact that it should be read regularly, the qualification of the speaker and the qualification of the listener. So here I've put up a slide of, a possible Bhagavad Sapta. And Srila Prabhupada explains that professional speakers and a materially absorbed audience can't actually derive any real benefit. Simply put, where there's material motivation on the part of the speaker or the listener, there's no real benefit, as such readings aren't purified from the contamination of material qualities. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, 24th chapter, where there's a section where Sanatana Goswami, where Lord Chaitanya is explaining to Sanatana Goswami the Atmarama verse. In verse 313, in the purport there, there's something that's very nice on this. It says that according to the Vedic injunction, Yasya Deve Para Bhakti, Yatha Deve Tatha Guru. All Vedic literatures maintain that the Bhagavatam has to be learned from the person Bhagavat. And to understand it, one has to engage in pure devotional service. Srimad Bhagavatam cannot be understood by so-called erudite scholars or grammarians. One who's developed pure Krishna consciousness and served the pure devotee and the spiritual master can understand the Bhagavatam and others cannot. So again, we've got a confirmation of the fact that, you know, the Bhagavatam has to be spoken by somebody who's actually living the Bhagavatam. And it has to be understood by someone who wants to or is developing pure devotional service. And thus, there can be a congenial combination to allow actual understanding of the Bhagavatam. So I just wanted to look very briefly at devotional service in the three modes. This is from the third canto, 29th chapter. So Devotional service is also there in the three modes of material nature. So in ignorance, this would look like someone who's envious, proud, violent, angry, and someone who's got a separate interest from Krishna. In passion, somebody with a motive for material enjoyment, fame and opulence, and in goodness, someone who offers the results of his activities to free himself from the entanglement of fruitive activities. So very simply put, if one has an ulterior motive, or for the kind of devotional service that they're performing, the actual service is manifest differently. And what we can gain from that is also different. In the Bhagavatam 1.2.6, it's explained that the highest dharma is that which is causeless and continual, unmotivated devotional service. Sarve pumsam paro dharma yato bhakti adhokshajek ahetaki apratiheta yenatma supersedati. So in that verse itself, it's explaining that, you know, pure devotional service is unmotivated and uninterrupted. And here we see the explanation given from the third canto, 29th chapter again, which I just spoke from, in terms of the modes, devotional service and the modes. Pure devotional service is shown when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is residing in everyone's heart. Just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally down towards the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows towards the Supreme Lord. So here it's very clear there's no other motive, and the attraction and flow of devotional service is continual. Yeah, so for us, we can meditate on this and try to mold ourselves and our lives in such a way that we can be fully engaged in devotional service. And also we can introspect to consider our motivations for why we're performing devotional service. So what's the crux of this verse? The crux of this is that if we have the wrong approach to spiritual activities, we can't derive real benefit. However, if material activities are approached properly, they can have. It's essentially a question of consciousness rather than just the bodily activity. At a certain point, one should start doing things in a deep way with absorption. This may seem very obvious, but it's easy to overlook. Obviously, when we start spiritual life, there are certain activities that are delineated by scripture, by Shastra, and by the Acharyas, which are more likely to invoke spiritual consciousness and are spiritually conducive, and vice versa. There are activities that need to be avoided. However, sometimes even activities that generally evoke spiritual consciousness can fail to do so. And in the beginning of spiritual life, we tend to demarcate everything based on what the body is doing. But at a certain maturation, we're expected to do things with a certain consciousness. You know, the kind of activities or the type of behavior a young child might show may be very sweet when they're very young. But if that same child, when they're growing up, shows those same behaviors or activities, they may seem inappropriate. So similarly, as we mature in spiritual life and we realize it's not just the activity, we have to consider and focus on our motivation and mood with which we're performing devotional service. And this becomes our responsibility. So, I think that's fairly clear there. So another really wonderful point that's highlighted in this purport is the dynamic between the speaker of the Bhagavatam and the listener. So if either one of the speaker or listener is potent, they can gain benefit. And here are a couple of examples. For example, Srivas Thakur heard the Bhagavatam from Devananda Pandit, who was giving a professional recitation tinged with Mayavad philosophy, but he still displayed symptoms of ecstasy. That was due to the sincerity of his listening. So there's a synergy involved, as the Bhagavatam is a dynamic living thing. Here's another example from the section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita I mentioned earlier, where Lord Chaitanya is explaining the Atmarama verse to Sanatan Goswami. And in verse 312, he says, "Now due to your association, another meaning has awakened. It is due to your devotional service that these waves of meaning are arising." So this is very wonderful. that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself is explaining that because of Sanatana Goswami's presence, he's having a new realization on the verse that he's explaining. And further down in the same section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a very sweet verse, verse 313, which says, Aham Vedmi, Lord Shiva speaks this actually, Aham Vedmi Sukho Veti Vyaso Veti Na Veti Va Bhaktiya Bhagavatam Grahyam Na Buddhya Na Cha Tikaya. Lord Shiva said, I may know, Sukadev Goswami, the son of Vyasadev, may know, and Vyasadev may know or may not know Srimad Bhagavatam. On the whole, Srimad Bhagavatam, the spotless Purana, can be learned only through devotional service, not by material intelligence, speculative methods, or imaginary commentaries. So this is a very interesting statement, considering that the speaker may not know the ultimate meaning of what he's saying, but those who are hearing may. So here the principle is that, you know, due to the receptivity of those who are listening, more things may come out than even the realization of the speaker allows, or even more than his realization is, because the Bhagavatam is a living, dynamic thing. So when we consider the practical application of this principle, obviously in any sort of learning, active listening by questioning, reflecting back, summarizing on the part of the listener can help to draw out more from the speaker and help the speaker to share their own realizations and to gain more realization. This is part of the dynamic process of Shravanam Kirtanam. But when this happens under the spiritual potency, new transcendental realizations come about. And when devotees are very proactive and they hear and eager to hear, there's a very natural dynamic and extraordinary things may come. Further down in the same section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya says, verse 323, if one becomes a madman like me, he may also understand the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam by this process. And in the purport it explains, one can understand the Bhagavatam only by following in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya, who was mad for Krishna. We cannot, of course, imitate Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's not possible. However, unless one is very serious about understanding Krishna, he cannot understand Srimad Bhagavatam. So again, there's a very clear indication to the way we live, the way we conduct our lives, our levels of actually engaging in spiritual life, and that desire and eagerness to hear about Krishna. So just as there's this general principle, phalana parichayate, just as one can understand a tree by its fruits, one can understand the efficacy of this process of devotional service by the ability of it to impress upon the heart and change the heart. So in the type of Bhagavat Sapta that Srila Prabhupada is referring to in the purport, which he terms to be like a show, both the speaker and the listener revert to their usual materialistic ways afterwards, which indicates that there's an inability of such recitations to effect a change on the heart. It's like, you know, Prabhupada uses this word show bottle. So, you know, if you think of a medicine that's been really diluted down, but it looks like you're buying the whole medicine, but actually it's only got a little bit in it because it wasn't supposed to be diluted, but it has been. So like that, you know, if it's show bottle devotional service, it may be so dilute that actually there's very little anyone can gain from it. If someone's very innocent and they desire and hope for spiritual change, but they don't know the process, they may get cheated due to their own ignorance. And the very innocent may obviously accrue some agyata sukriti, which is unknown pious activity, but it may take a long time to see any perceptible change. So what's the litmus test? What's the barometer for understanding whether this process is really bona fide and efficient? So there are a few indications, again, given in the purport itself. There'll be unlimited happiness in such discussions, or at least some transcendental taste. There'll be a fading of materialistic activities or mentality. We'll start being able to see things as they actually are, and the small fruits of knowledge and detachment develop. And so these are all ways in which we can see whether we're applying ourselves properly to this process of Shravanam Kirtanam. And how can we do it? So obviously we have to be eager to hear. And one way we can do that is by associating with those who are very eager to hear and relish the Bhagavatam, and by understanding the benefits of hearing the Bhagavatam. Then we'll approach it with attention, and also by being pure in life and in habit. This nice purport from the Bhagavatam 1.3.44, no one can give rapt attention who's not pure in mind. No one can be pure in mind who's not pure in action. No one can be pure in action who's not pure in eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. But somehow or other, if someone hears with rapt attention from the right person at the very beginning, one can assuredly see Lord Krishna in person in the pages of the Bhagavatam. That's 1.3.44. So that highlights that point. And this is a very wonderful verse from the Bhagavatam 4.20.25. My dear Lord, you're glorified by the selected verses uttered by great personalities. Such glorification of your lotus feet is just like saffron particles. When the transcendental vibration from the mouths of great devotees carries the aroma of the saffron dust of your lotus feet, the forgetful living entity gradually remembers his eternal relationship with you. Devotees thus gradually come to the right conclusion about the value of life. My dear Lord, I do not need any other benediction but the opportunity to hear from the mouth of your pure devotee. In the purport, it says, a pure devotee always engages in the service of the Lord, taking shelter of his lotus feet, and therefore he has a direct connection with the saffron mercy particles that are strewn over the lotus feet of the Lord. Although when a pure devotee speaks, the articulation of the voice may resemble the sound of this material sky, the voice is spiritually very powerful because it touches the particles of saffron dust on the lotus feet of the Lord. And as soon as a sleeping living entity hears the powerful voice emanating from the mouth of a pure devotee, he immediately remembers his eternal relationship with the Lord, although up until that moment he'd forgotten everything. So I think we've all had some experience of this, of a time when we've heard something. We may have heard the same thing before. We may have read the same thing before. But on a particular occasion, when we hear it from a particular devotee or in a particular circumstance, somehow it really penetrates the heart and we can feel that something is moving inside and there's some change happening. So this is because when we hear from these devotees who are dedicated to serving the lotus feet of the Lord, it's not mundane sound vibration. They're carrying these saffron dust particles of the Lord's lotus feet, and therefore they're able to affect change on our hearts. So I'd like to conclude discussing the verse there, and we'll just move on to Shivratri. So today is, according to the Manas calendar, today is Mahashivratri here in London. And Shivratri is actually a Vaishnav celebration. There are many Shiva temples in Vrindavan and Mayapur. Bhakti Vinod Thakur had deities of Shiva and Durga in his home. And as Vaishnavs, we respect the demigods, and some Vaishnavs include the worship of the demigods as part of their worship to Lord Krishna, but they don't worship them separately from Krishna. And that's an important principle for Vaishnavs, because we want our faith and our worship to be ekanta, or one focus. And generally our Ashtadevs will be Radha Krishna, Lord Jagannath, Panchatattva, like that. But we worship and revere and pray to Lord Shiva as the topmost Vaishnava. So this is a really nice excerpt from the Krishna book, chapter 24. Once upon a time, the cowherd men of Vrindavan, headed by Nanda Maharaj, decided to go to Ambikavan to observe the Shivratri ceremony. The Rasalila was performed during the autumn, and after that, the next big ceremony is Hori, or the Dola Yatra ceremony. Between the Dola Yatra ceremony and the Rasalila ceremony, there is one important ceremony called Shivaratri, which is especially observed by the Shaivites, or devotees of Lord Shiva. Sometimes the Vaishnavas also observe this ceremony because they accept Lord Shiva as the foremost Vaishnava, but the function of Shivaratri is not observed very regularly by the Bhaktas, or devotees of Krishna. Under the circumstances, it is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men once upon a time desired. This means they were not regularly observing the Shivaratri function, but that once upon a time they wanted to go to Ambikaman out of curiosity. That's from Krishna Book, chapter 24. And here we understand this slide is explaining that the manifestation of Rudra. So we understand that Rudra, who's an expansion of Lord Shiva, was actually manifest today, or appeared to, on this day, on Mahashivratri. And what had happened is that Lord Brahma had wanted the four Kumaras to generate progeny as part of his secondary creating activity. But the four Kumaras had decided that they wanted to remain celibate and declined to follow that instruction. And Lord Brahma became angry. So I'll just read this. Although he tried to curb his anger, it came out from between his eyebrows, and a child mixed blue and red was immediately generated. After his birth, he began to cry, "O destiny maker, teacher of the universe, kindly designate my name and place." The all-powerful Brahma, who was born from the lotus flower, pacified the boy with gentle words, accepting his request, and said, "Do not cry. I shall certainly do as you desire." Thereafter, Brahma said, "O chief of the demigods, you shall be called by the name Rudra by all the people because you have so anxiously cried." So today is, in that sense, the appearance of Lord Shiva. And for the last 7 or 8 years, I think, around that time, in Rajapur, in Samantadweep, Mayapur, at the Jagannath Temple, Shivaratri is observed. Senior devotees bathe Lord Shiva. This is a picture here of their Lord Shiva there, with milk, honey, yogurt, Ganga water, which is all offered with love, and bale leaves, along with unlimited garlands. And then the Mahaprasad of Lord Jagannath, Baladev, and Subhadra, and their garlands are offered to their dearmost devotee, Lord Shiva. Senior devotees tell pastimes of Lord Shiva, and there are dramatic performances as well, followed by a wonderful feast. So who is Lord Shiva? Shiva means auspicious. Shiva Tattva, or the identity and function and position of Lord Shiva, is one of the most difficult spiritual truths to understand. Just as Lord Vishnu has different types of expansion, so does Lord Shiva. So in the Brahma Samhita 5.45, it says, "Shidam yathadati vikara vishesha yoga sanjayate nahi tata prathagasti heto yashambhutamapi tata samupeti karya govindamadi purusham tamaham vajami." Just as milk is transformed into curd by the action of acids, but yet the effect curd is neither the same as nor different from its cause, namely milk, so I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whom the state of Shambhu is a transformation for the performance of the work of destruction. So just like when milk contacts a souring agent, it becomes yoga. In the same way, when Mahavishnu glances at material nature, he manifests himself as Shambhu. But he also remains as Mahavishnu. So there is a causal relationship there, but not transformational one. And it's unidirectional. So yogurt can come from milk, but milk can't come from yogurt. Krishna can do everything that Lord Shiva can, but not vice versa. And just to give a brief overview of Lord Shiva's manifestation. So as Krishna expands into Balaram, and then the Chaturvyuha, consisting of Vasudev, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. And then from that Sankarshan, there's a second Chaturvyuha of Vasudev, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. Then from that Sankarshan come Sadashiv and Mahavishnu. From Prajumna comes Garbhodakashaya Vishnu. And from Aniruddha comes Kshirodakashaya Vishnu. So essentially, Shri Krishna in his form as Sankarshan expands as Sadashiva, or the original Shiva. And from that original Shiva, all other Shivas or Rudras manifest. And Lord Shiva knows that Sankarshan is the origin of his existence, and so he's always in meditation on Sankarshan. So here I've just included a diagram of the spiritual world and a typical universe, one universe. And in this area, we can see Mahavishnu lying in these kind of cloud area, and all these universes manifesting from the pores of his body. So we understand from the Brahma Samhita that 3/4 of everything is spiritual and 1/4 is material. And in that material area or realm, Mahavishnu lies, and from the pores of his body, unlimited bubbles come out, and each of these has a universe in it. So this is just a kind of a caption of a typical universe. And here, above here, we see Goloka Vrindavan, then the Vaikuntha realm. And here, which I'll show you on the next slide closer, is Maheshtham, or Kailash, just above the Brahma Jyoti. And below that is Devitham, or the mundane material world. So this is explained nicely in this verse of the Brahma Samhita. Goloka namni nija namni tale cha tasya Devi Mahesha Hari Dhamma Shuteshu Teshu Tete Prabhava Nichaya Vihitaschayena Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So lowest of all is located Devi Dham, which is the mundane world. Next above it is Mahesh Dham, that's this bit here. Above Mahesh Dham is placed Hari Dham. And above them all is Krishna's own realm, named Goloka. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who has allocated their respective authorities to the rulers of those graded realms. So this is just to give us an understanding of where Maheshtham is in relation to a typical material universe and the spiritual realm. But there's more depth to this understanding as well. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it explains, in the Vayu Purana, there's a description of Sadashiv in one of the Vaikuntha planets. That Sadashiv is a direct expansion of Lord Krishna's form for pastimes. It is said that Sadashiv, Lord Shambhu, is an expansion from the Sadashiv in the Vaikuntha planets, Lord Vishnu, and that his consort, Mahamaya, is an expansion of Ramadevi, or Lakshmi. Mahamaya is the origin or birthplace of material nature. So this Sadashiva in the Vaikuntha planets is a Narayan Murthy, or a Narayan form, Vishnu form, with his own planet. And that Lakshmi Narayan, or that Ramadevi and Narayan, then expand to become Sadashiva Lord Shambhu, and Mahamaya, who reside in Maheshtham. So just to say at this point that there's actually not, I mean, that there is a difference, but there's a lot of similarities between Narayan and Shiva. So Jiva may have up to 50 qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shiva has 55, Narayan has 60, and Krishna himself has 4 more. So a total of 64 qualities. It's very hard for us to actually understand these differences, but we can understand from this that Lord Shiva's position is very exalted. And he's also Gunavatar, an incarnation of the Lord who maintains the mode of ignorance. And Shiva himself has his own tattva. So just like we have Jiva tattva, and Shiva Tattva, Lord Shiva has his own Tattva, which is Shiva Tattva. Sorry, I meant there's Jiva Tattva and Vishnu Tattva, and Lord Shiva has his own Tattva, which is Shiva Tattva. So in the Gita, in 14.4, Krishna explains that he's the father of all living entities. And in the Bhagavatam in 8.7.22, this is expanded on. And it's explained here, and I'll read this slide to you, that Lord Vishnu is always unattached to material activities. And when material activities are to be performed, Lord Vishnu performs them through Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is therefore worshipped on the level of Lord Vishnu. When Lord Vishnu is untouched by the external energy, he's Lord Vishnu. But when he's in touch with the external energy, he appears in his feature as Lord Shiva. So this picture shows Mahavishnu glancing at the unmanifest Pradhan, though I know it's displayed here as Durga Devi. But that glance, actually, which activates material nature, is a Sadashiv in the form of Shambhu. And it is from that Shambhu that Rudra is then later manifest. Yeah. And when this glance is thrown at Pradhan, you know, Mahavishnu, through the agency of Shambhu, is actually infusing the Pradhan energy with all the living beings at this point and activating it. So, you know, Lord Chaitanya, when he was speaking and reasoning with Shivites, one thing he explained which can help us to understand how Vishnu and Lord Shiva connected is that he explained that, basically, rather than engaging in formal debate with these followers of Lord Shiva, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just simply explained that Lord Shiva takes the Ganges water, which flows into this realm from the spiritual realm, where Lord Vamana Dev's foot pierced the universal covering on his head. He's therefore taking the Charanamrita of Lord Vishnu on his head, because as we know, Vamana Dev is Lord Vishnu, avatar of Lord Vishnu. So Lord Shiva takes that Charanamrita on his head. So this shows you the very intimate and reverential connection between Lord Vishnu and Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva, in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, towards the end of the Bhagavatam, there's this beautiful verse which reveres him as the topmost Vaishnav. Just as the Ganga is the greatest of all rivers, Lord Achyuta, the supreme amongst deities, and Lord Shambhu, Shiva, the greatest of all Vaishnavas, so Srimad Bhagavatam is the greatest of all Puranas. And, you know, kind of just like a display or a nice pastime of Lord Shiva's conviction and dedication to the Supreme Lord is that he himself chants the names of Ram. And during Lord Chaitanya's pilgrimage to South India, he taught a Brahmin devotee of Lord Ram to chant the Maha Mantra by quoting these words of Lord Shiva from the Padma Purana. Rama Rama Ti Rama Ti Rama Rama Manorame Sahasranama Vistulyam Rama Nama Varanane. Lord Shiva addressed his wife Durga as Varanana, explaining, I chant the holy name of Ram, 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 and thus enjoy this beautiful sound. This holy name of Ramchandra is equal to 1,000 holy names of Lord Vishnu. And this is a wonderful instruction by Lord Shiva from the Padma Purana. Aradhananam sarvesham Vishnu aradhanam param tasmat parataram devi tadiyanam samarchanam. So Parvati had asked Lord Shiva, what is the best type of worship? What's the topmost worship? And Lord Shiva spoke this verse, explaining that of all types of worship, the worship of Lord Vishnu is the best. But even better than the worship of Lord Vishnu is the worship of Tadiya, those things connected to him, i.e. his devotees, the Vaishnavas. And there's another verse in the Adi Purana which says, those who worship me directly are not real devotees. Real devotees are those who are devoted to my devotees. Krishna says that. So do we worship Lord Shiva? Well, we do every day because we're always saying a Panchatattva mantra. And in many temples, there are Panchatattva deities. So how can we understand this mystery that Advaitacharya is both Mahavishnu and Sadashiva? So there's a nice excerpt from Srila Prabhupada's letter to Mr. Vincent Cole. He says, regarding your question, you may refer to Adi Leela 679 with a purple, Chaitanya Charitamrita. The answer is there. The basic understanding is that Sadashiva is an expansion of Mahavishnu. And that same Sadashiva incarnates as Advaitacharya. Therefore, since Advaitacharya is an incarnation of Sadashiva, who is non-different from Mahavishnu, we can say that Advaitacharya is an incarnation of Mahavishnu. It can be said both ways, that he's an incarnation of Sadashiva or Mahavishnu. So yeah, we have Advaitacharya there, whom we're always worshipping to and praying to, and We understand and know that Lord Chaitanya actually advented because of his prayers and his requests, the prayers and requests of Advaita Acharya. So again, this is giving us an insight into the very deep connection between Krishna and Lord Shiva. And here at the manor, we worship Lord Hanuman on the altar every day. Hanuman is understood to be a plenary portion of Lord Shiva. He possesses extraordinary strength of Lord Vayu, and he has the potencies of Lord Shiva. He's also known as Maharudra or Rudransha, and that's explained in the Brahmavivarta Purana. And here I've included a nice quote by Radhanath Swami. How can we possibly approach Ram without getting the blessings of that person who's most dear to his life, Hanumanji? And in Chaitanya Leela, Hanumanji comes as Murari Gupta. And Lord Chaitanya's Shiva Astakam is recorded in Murari Gupta's Chaitanya Charitam Mahakavya. It's in the third chapter, if anybody would like to look it up later. So this pastime of churning of the milk ocean, which you all discussed in class yesterday morning, it's a very wonderful pastime. And as we heard, both the demigods and the demons, you know, went to ask Lord Shiva for help when this hala help poison came out of the churning of the ocean. And Lord Shiva gathered it in his palms and actually swallowed or drank it all. And because of that, he has this Nilkant blue neck and helped everybody. So there's this really wonderful verse in the 8th canto, 7th chapter, verse 44, which says, Tapyante lokatapena sadhava prayasojana paramaradhanam tatti purushasya khilatmana. It is said that great personalities almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people in general. This is considered the highest method of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart. And in the purport, it explains that all the Shastras conclude, therefore, that spreading Krishna consciousness, the Krishna consciousness movement, is the best welfare activity in the world because of the ultimate benefit it bestows upon people in general. Because of that, the Lord very quickly recognizes such service performed by a devotee. So, I read this and I just was kind of amazed at the example that Lord Shiva sets here to us. And we may think that, well, you know, he's a Mahajan, he's one of the 12 Mahajans, exemplary personality, almost, you know, very closely connected to Lord Vishnu. But even he is accepting this voluntary tapasya for the sake of people in general. And in that purport, it also explains that the Lord is very automatically pleased by this tapasya. And if the Lord's pleased with someone, what's left for them to achieve? Even if that person, if that person has been recognized by the Lord, even if he doesn't ask for anything, the Lord who is within supplies whatever he wants. So, you know, it's a very profound verse, and it's something that we can really meditate on as we try to serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and understand that whatever small sacrifices we take on in trying to share Krishna Bhakti with others, it's very pleasing to the Lord. And this is a very intimate service, actually. And very quickly, it says here, very quickly the Lord recognizes such service. So moving on to the next slide. In Vrindavan, I just wanted to mention that in Vrindavan, Lord Shiva is also worshipped in his form of Gopishwar Mahadev, which is Lord Shiva in the form of a gopi, which he accepted to witness the Rasalila pastime. Lord Shiva is also known as the Kshetrapala, the protector and guardian of the holy dham. And therefore devotees pray to him to allow them entrance into the dham. Something very wonderful to know about Lord Shiva. Whenever we're trying to enter the dham or enter Vrindavan, we should especially pray to Gopeshwar Mahadev for entrance. And this Lord Shiva is actually understood to be Sadashiva, or one of the original forms of Lord Shiva. Here we have a very wonderful prayer by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur from the Sankalpa Kalpa Drumada. Vrindavanavani pate jaya soma soma mole Sanaka sanandana sanatana naradevya Gopishvara Vraja Vilasi Yugangri Padme Prema Prayacha Nirupati Namo Namaste. O gatekeeper of Vrindavan, O Soma, all glories to you. O you whose forehead is decorated with the moon, and who is worshipable by the sages headed by Sanaka, Sanananda, and Narada, O Gopishvara, desiring that you bestow upon me pure love for the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha Krishna, who perform joyous pastimes in Rajadham, I offer my obeisances to you again and again. It's a very sweet verse. So we can see from this, you know, that by praying to Lord Shiva as the topmost Vaishnava, he can give us an understanding and entry into Krishna's eternal pastimes. And Lord Shiva's heartfelt desire is that he actually wants his followers to become very serious devotees of the Supreme Lord. So we can pray to Lord Shiva today to help us advance in Krishna consciousness. And this will actually be very pleasing. He'll be very pleased by that. And the best way to pray to Lord Krishna is by chanting Hare Krishna. I also want to say that Jiva Goswami explains that obstacles in spiritual life that are very difficult to overcome by our own endeavor can be overcome very easily by the blessings of a Mahabhagavat. And Lord Shiva is both a Mahabhagavat and one of the 12 Mahajans. And so he's also one of our Shiksha Gurus. And he has his own Sampradaya, the Rudra Sampradaya. But the point here being that by praying to him, we can more easily overcome obstacles that may be very difficult to overcome otherwise. There's a nice prayer included in some writing by Giriraj Maharaj from Shivaratri last year. And he says, Lord Shiva is in charge of the false ego. So I pray to him to free me from mine and to establish me in my constitutional position of eternal service to Sri Sri Gandharika Giridhari and the divine servants. So he's specifically making a prayer here to be free from the false ego, as well as to be reinstituted in his eternal position of service. So part of the reason for this prayer is because the function, Lord Shiva has a function in relation to the jivas where because he's in charge of the mode of ignorance, he's also the master of false ego in all living beings. And actually by his mercy, we can actually become relieved from the clutches of false ego and reawaken our real ego as servants of Krishna and achieve permanent shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord. So I was going to end on that point. So thank you so much for bearing with this PowerPoint and the online class. And I'd like to hand over to Sankirtan Priyaprabhu to see if there are any comments, reflections, or questions. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Neelamani Mataji. It's so nice to hear all the amazing pastimes of Lord Shiva. You know, you start off the beautiful class to take us through about the value of devotee association, especially when reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, you also talked about how if we come to this platform with some material expectation, either from the listener's side or from the reciter's side, then the fruits are not anything to gain. Also, how the three modes of material nature is in devotional service and what's the relationship with that was really nice, and how we can actually get this motive for pure transcendental devotional service and develop that attraction and activate our motive to come closer to that. And then this amazing, obviously, pastimes from Lord Shiva. Very, very nice. Thank you. Very, very nectarian to our ears. We have got a couple of questions. Beautiful class, somebody says. Harika Mataji from the temple room has got a question saying, Dandavat Pranam, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, a beautiful class. Please, can you explain with your own experience how we can develop this consciousness to hear? Most of us do not have all the ears to really listen. We are hearing, but again, the conception of deep realization is a far concept for us unhumble fallen souls. How can we fathom? Sorry, I need to bring my chat back. How can we fathom to understand the purity of pure devotees when we have no purity of our own to strive from the beginning?
Thank you so much for that question. It's a very sincere and profound question. And I've just pulled up this slide one more time to help us refresh some of the points here. So as I understand, Harika Mataji is asking, how can we develop that eagerness to hear from the beginning if we're not so inclined? Have I understood the question correctly? Or would you like to expand?
That's one part of the question in terms of the hearing aspect and getting conceptions of deep realizations.
Okay, thank you. So yeah, these conceptions, okay, so also deep realization. So I think I'll just address the first part first. So I think at the very beginning of spiritual life, you know, we may not have developed that or unearthed our own natural taste for hearing about Krishna, having been used to, you know, kind of cultivating a taste for material life for so many lifetimes. But actually, when we can have that connection with a pure devotee, and we have that pure devotee there, as Srila Prabhupada in his books and purports, who's accessible to us all. So as we connect with the books and actually discuss them, that actual natural taste for hearing more starts gradually awakening. And I think it's also important, as it says on this slide, to actually try to associate with people who themselves have that deep taste, because then naturally we also develop that deep taste. This principle of association is nice expanded on in the Nectar of Instruction, but essentially it is a simple fact that when we actually spend time with those who understand Krishna and have deep realizations, we then also start to be able to perceive that and those realizations ourselves. Going to the second part of your question, I would say that it's also very important to perform devotional service, because, you know, the actual process is Tadvidhi Pranipatena Pariprasnena Sevaya from 434 of the Gita, that this combination of submissive inquiry and devotional and service that's rendered to the spiritual master actually enables us to have these realizations in our heart. Because it's one thing to know something on an intellectual level or to appreciate something theoretically, but for the actual vijnan or the actual knowledge to arise in the heart, there has to be this combination of this this submissive receptive inquiry, which is not done in a challenging way, and also the actual performance of devotional service, which softens the heart, and it also endears the spiritual master. It helps us to access blessings from the parampara, from the previous acharyas, from Srila Prabhupada himself, you know, when we are actually serving the Krishna consciousness movement. And so as that process is a dynamic process, and as we keep applying ourselves to it, these impressions and these realizations become stronger. And they're like building blocks. It's like building a house. If we have that strong foundation and we, you know, build one step, we can then build on that further. So it's, how can we say, it's not a straight line. It's an exponential curve, in simple words, you know. So there comes a point where things really start taking off in spiritual life. But I'm sure Harika Mataji herself also has deep realizations of that. But these are just some thoughts to share.
Thank you. That was very, very nice points that you brought out from the slide, as well as your immense knowledge. Ramnath Sukhaprabhu has a comment and a question. He says, we know that Srila Prabhupada never emphasized Shivaratri, yet in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, there are many verses emphasizing the importance of Shivaratri for advancing in Krishna Bhakti. How can you reconcile these seemingly two perspectives?
Okay, so thank you so much for that question, Ramnath Sukhaprabhu. I'm pretty sure you have, or will definitely have a better reflection on this answer, on the answer to this question than I have. And if you do have a reflection on it, please put it in the chat and Sankirtan Prabhu can also read that out. It's something we're taught when we do kind of active discussing of Shastra is to always reflect the question back to the person who's asked it initially. Because often actually the person who asked the question has some realization on it themselves. So this is a quite a deep subject matter. We can understand that, you know, when Srila Prabhupada established the movement, he was very clear in his mind in terms of what he wanted to accomplish and what was necessary at that time. And it may be that certain details weren't emphasized. And part of the reason of that reason for that may also be, as I heard in one class by Shivram Swami, that in Kali Yuga, we tend to become very confused. And it's very easy for us to become kind of diverted or our focus to become many-branched. And part of the reason for that in Kali Yuga is because of the contamination of impersonalism. So I can't know what Srila Prabhupada's exact thoughts were in regards to not establishing Shivratri as a regular Vaishnava festival. But I can reflect on the fact that he may have wanted to keep things as kind of straightforward and mainly put the emphasis on the main points, you know, in the time that he was establishing the movement. And so in this vein, that kind of helps out. So the second part of the question, which is how do we reconcile the fact that Sanatana Goswami has all these details there in the Hari Bhakti Vilas about the observance of Shivratri. So we know even, you know, as ISKCON's developed, you know, as far as I understand, the worship of Giriraj was not there in Srila Prabhupada's time. Neither was the worship of Vrindadevi as a separate deity. And neither, I don't think, was there the worship of the Shivling or Lord Shiva. But as we know, the former two are worshipped regularly in temples and in homes now. And it may be in the future that the worship of Lord Shiva is incorporated more into the movement as people understand his position. And I feel like this point of knowledge is the essence. You know, I said something at the very beginning that Vaishnavas will worship Lord Shiva, or they may even also worship Lord Durga as part of their worship to Lord Krishna, but they'll not worship them separately. And I think that principle for Vaishnavas is the crux of it. You know, we see Lord Shiva as a great Vaishnava and a Shiksha Guru and someone who can enhance our development of Krishna Bhakti. And if his glorification, to start with, is brought into ISKCON in that sense, I think it may be very helpful for devotees. And then there may be those devotees who do want to delve into the details in Hari Bhakti Vilas and observe Shivratri accordingly. But I don't know how the institution will see that. Thank you.
Thank you again. Very nice response to the question. A nice question, dear Ramana Sukha Prabhu. So we've got, maybe we'll take one. There's lots of questions coming up. So, but we will take maybe one more. I'll take a very simple one first, and then there are two simple ones, perhaps. One is Hare Krishna. You said that Rudra came from Brahma when he got angry. You then said all Rudras come from Sadashiv. Can you clarify?
Yeah. Just before I go to this question, what did Ramnath Sukhapuru type anything on his reflection? The response to the last, okay. Yeah. I just wanted to check because, you know, he may have had some more points to add.
I would have read it out.
Okay, thank you. So this question is how, you said about Rudra coming from Lord Shiva. No, what, can you
remember? No, so obviously, Lord, we said earlier on in your class that Rudra came from Brahma's anger.
Yes.
And then later on, we also said all Rudras actually come from Sadashiv.
Okay. So, yeah, this is not so simple to understand, but I'll try to explain a little bit as far as I know. So Sadashiv essentially has his Narayan Murti in Vaikuntha. Then he and Lakshmi Devi expand to Lord Sadashiva Shambhu and Mahamaya, in Maheshtham, just outside the gates of Vaikuntha. Then from there, we understand that from that Sadashiva come all the other Shivas. Sadashiva means the original Shiva. Actually, they all originally come from the Vishnumurti, but it's via the Shambhu Sadashiva. So exactly, and we know from this glance of Mahavishnu that that glance is Sadashiva as Shambhu, which then infuses the material energy with all the living beings. Now, how exactly, and there's also the expansion of Lord Shiva in this universe, but how that Shiva in this universe then manifest, or actually it would have been the Shambhu Shiva, manifests as Rudra, I'm not exactly sure. Ramnath Sukhaprabhu, if you have any light on that, please type it into the chat. But yeah, but we understand that as in that actual pastime, that is the first time, apart from the infusing of the living entities, this is the first time that we see Lord Shiva as Rudra.
Thank you. I think that's at least gives us the idea of, well, answers the question and gives us some more information. And if Ramnath Sukhaprabhu, you want to add anything, please, you can actually unmute yourself and start your video and also contribute. Maybe one last question and we'll maybe close the class there. Why don't we fast over Shivratri? That's what from Meena Mataji.
Okay. So I think this is part of the detail of the question that Ramnath Sukhaprabhu was alluding to earlier, because these observances are explained in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, but generally in ISKCON, they're not instituted in the institution. There may be individuals who choose to follow them. Why they're not instituted, I think that's also because the actual worship of Lord Shiva is not instituted, because our focus is on worshipping the source of everything, which is Krishna. But we worship and understand Lord Shiva's tattva as a great Vaishnava. So in that vein, if someone with that understanding wants to perform extra tapasya or follow the things outlined in Hari Bhakti Vilas, as an observance of Shivaratri, again, I would say that probably needs to be done in consultation with at least a Shiksha Guru or spiritual master, or with some blessings and authorization rather than done whimsically. Because in the worship of Lord Shiva, one has to be careful. His nature is Ashutosh, which means he's very easily pleased, but he can also be angered. So we want to... And that's because of he's not affected by the mode of ignorance, but because he oversees it, that aspect of his nature is also there. So I think it's important that whatever we take on or whatever we decide to observe, it's done in proper consultation. But essentially, Lord Shiva desires that everyone actually... He's always meditating on Sankarshan. He's chanting the names of Ram. So he desires and he's so pleased if we can become also Vaishnavas and follow in his footsteps, emulate him in that way. I hope that helps.
That helps a lot, yes. As you said, you know, we try to water the root of the tree.
Yeah.
And then we get the benediction anyway. But yes, you know, such an exalted Vaishnav and can only bestow blessings upon all of us. Thank you for your wonderful class again. It's been such a nice music to the ears to hear you speak.